So the factory
Provided employment for them.
and so is that where you saw your
Yeah,
future?
everybody. Well, I say everybody, two out of three.
What about the school certificates that you had then, didn't they? Was there any thought of that?
Well, in those days, they weren't. Dickinson's was a. I should say that, well, you couldn't compare any firm in this area with Dickinson's, unfortunately, because there was nothing big enough. Well, I should say that they were about the only firm here who really took any notice of what your academic, whether you've been successful or not. And in order to get over that, they had a lot of buildings down there. They had a special place built, which they called it their school. It was like a little training centre. But when you take the likes of Philip and I, we both went there at the same time and started work there. Well, for the first for about the first month that we worked there, we had to go to and attend a sort of a lesson, really, at this what they call their school. And all you did was you went there, and you didn't have to you take notes and all that sort of thing, but what in fact you were just learning about the factory and what they made and all that, and the general information about them. And that was when you'd make your notes, they had a chap there, and he used to take those notes at the end of every week, and he would able to tell whether or not, first of all, whether you've been paying attention to what has been said to you, and then secondly, whether or not you were able to write it down and make some sense of it. And
so they were checking you for literacy,
well,
really.
To a certain extent, yeah, that was all. But it was only from their point of view, really. They were only concerned about the Dickinson side of things, you know, not your own, not anything else, just their side of things. That was all it was.
So
and then they would this chap, I can remember his name, but. I can remember his name, but I can't really give him a title because he was like a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But
and who was that then?
Really.
What was it called?
But his name is Newell, N-E-W-A-L-L, Newell, Mr. Newell, N-E-W-A-L-L, that's it, that was his name. And he only used to report back to, in my case, it was the department I was in, and it was Philip's case, it was the department that he was in.
And what department were you in?
Well, I was in, when I first went to work there, I was sent to work in the post office. And they had a big place like that. They had their own post office, their own stamps. Their own stamps were embossed with a JD embossed on the stamps. And that's all the... from 8 years up to sixpence, for, you know, and then they were embossed, all embossed in, and they had their own post office inside the, it was just inside the main entrance, and Philip went to work in the department where they made the cards, you know, like the Christmas cards and the visiting cards and all that sort of thing, and he went in there. And it was just a job, you know, in those days, because we were that age, we didn't really mean one thing or the other.
So you were like 14, turning 15?
Yeah, we were coming up 15, we were between 14 and 15. And that was it, you see. We got a job. Mind you.
Did you feel lucky to get a job at
we were lucky. You know, there was never other work in the town, but.
So you didn't feel the impact of the depression that maybe some other areas of the country had felt, like less unemployment.
We were never really worried about getting a job, because we always knew that we would get a job at Dickinson's. We knew that. We knew enough about that to know that long before we ever came back home again.
Can you remember what your first wage was?
Yeah, more or less. I think it was about $9 a week. About $9 a week, yeah.
And some of that would have to go to your mother for board, would it?
Well, yeah. But then, of course, things were so different then.
So how much pocket money would you have as a 15-year-old?
Not much, really. But it was never enough, you know. We used to have to try and make it a bit bigger if we could somehow.
How would you do that?
Well, there's always a possibility of maybe taking a little private job somewhere. I lived in living in Berkhamsted, and I used to make the journey into Apsley, you see. Because that's where the Dickinson's was. But of course, that in itself took some of my money, because I had to pay the bus fare. That was ridiculously low in those days. It was still enough to make a little bit of a hole in it. So goodness only knows what some of these people who came from Tring and all sorts of places like that, how they got on. Anyway. What we did was we used to try and find, maybe do an odd job somewhere. And
what kind of odd job for that?
Well, we would sort of, if we got to know somebody, this is at Berkhamsted, we got to know somebody who was, this conservative club was over the top of, well, in those days it was a store called Home and Colonial. People would remember that because it was a well-known. That is to say, anybody who's any age would remember. And the international stores and things, well, they're all old ones, not like it is now. Anyway, that was Home and Colonial. They were downstairs, and I think we got a little job on a Saturday morning or something with them. Boosted our money up. Sometimes in the evening, it was only just sort of a something and nothing, but we did that for as long as it was necessary. Of course, mind you, we were on loan money down there for an awful long time, because they had their own. In those days, there was no such thing things like the Transport and General Workers and all that sort of thing had a union, but they had their own union down there, and because they were the biggest employer in the district, they went by their own union,
there wasn't really any kind of conflict between union and management.
Not really, because we all knew that everybody knew, even the. Adult workers down there knew that things weren't going to alter for as long as ever they were paying the wages, paying the sort of wages that they were, and using the structure that was, which they considered to be the best, which was there to work to their way of thinking. They weren't going to alter that until there was any sort of pressure put on them, you see. And that never happened until after the war.
So
that was a made a big difference there.
So in the pre-war period, as a 15-16 year old, had you started developing any bad habits, drinking, smoking, that kind of thing? And
that's well, I should say.
So pubs and cigarettes, are they?
Well, we never used to do much. No. I mean, if we never used to do much boozing because we couldn't really afford to, you know. Although it was cheap enough. I mean, but.
What about your football? Had you kept that?
Oh well, we kept that going. We kept that going. We never stopped that. We got ourselves fixed up with playing for somebody somewhere. We were always playing for a club somewhere.
That'll be local teams.
Yeah.
Can you remember which ones they were that you played for?
What?
Can you remember which ones they were that you played for at this
well,
time?
Well, there were several. Social clubs in this area. I played. I went on for a long time, quite a long time. Philip didn't carry on with football that much. He went to athletics more. He went into athletics more, and he I don't know what made him do that, but he suddenly got interested in athletics. Well, I can tell you what made him do it because he wouldn't have had to say it was thanks to Dickinson's really that he got the chance to do that. Because Dickinson's over they had a football team, a works team there, but it was a something and nothing thing. It was nothing very well organised. It wasn't organised that well, which was surprising really, because they could have got a good team out of there.
What do you mean, something or nothing?
Well, I mean, they weren't playing in a particularly good league, and some of the fixtures it wasn't all that well organised.
So you felt you could do better with some of these other teams?
Yeah, you would do better by going elsewhere in the town like we did, and there were some social clubs in the town, and they started running their own football teams, and so we started playing for them.
Were you good players, do you think?
Well, no, reasonable.
So you never thought of playing professionally?
Oh, no.
That was never an ambition?
I've always been interested to the extent that, I've always been interested to the extent of even going watching. In much later years, I did about as a season ticket holder at Watford for about 20 years, and you know I got to know various people through that, mainly because I had a well, he wasn't a friend, but he was a friend. He was a friend of my eldest brother's, and he was a sports editor of the Watford Observer, and he got to know me somehow or other, found out what my name was, asked me about my brother, and I knew his name, I knew this chap's name, I'd read it in the Watford Observer and that. I'd never met him until, I can't remember how it happened now. It happened one day at a match, I know. Somebody called me by name, and then he started asking me some questions. And so I got rather friendly with him, and he used to be up there in the press box. My seat was just in front of him. The press box, and the chap I used to go with, we were just in front, and he always used to come down and have a word with me when I got to know him well. So of course I knew what was going on because he knew what was going on, you see. And Oliver Phillips, his name was. Oliver Phillips. He lives in Surrey.
Back in the 30s, so you were still keenly interested in sport.
Oh yeah.
And what was your attitude to your job? Do you think that was like a job for life that you would be there for, or did you have ambitions of doing other things?
No, I needed to. That's with, say, 16. By the time I was about 16, 17, 18, not so much 18, but 17, I made a move out of that first job that I had. I went into another department to earn more money. That was my main reason.
How much were you earning? The new job.
Well, I think. Damn it.
So your new job, what were you earning?
Well, after the 19 odd, well, that time I'd more or less more than doubled my money, you know. And I'd also found a little job in the evening as well, for a couple of nights a week. That was in Dickinson's.
What was your new job?
Well, I went into another department. I went into the department where they made all the envelopes. And of course, in those days, they were making the envelopes for not only, it wasn't just better than one, but it was income tax people, football pools, millions and millions and millions of them, you know. And then,
so what did you actually have to do in this?
Well, I went into the place where most of the big customers had, they used to keep a stock. Always used to keep a stock of the the most popular sizes of various envelopes, and I went into that department, which they called envelope stock, but which were used to carry a lot of the customers' own stock. They used to make it and stock it in there, you know. So it was just for general use as well, you know, the ordinary customers' use as well.
But what were you actually doing? Were you actually working on a machine?
I wasn't on a machine, anything like that. No, it was more of a clerical job. It was more of a clerical job, really, because I had to learn about the various sizes of the envelopes and whether or not they were what type of envelope they were and whatever. Pocket or banker or whatever they call them and all that, you know. But used to get these big batches of tickets used to come down from the main office. You used to have to sort all these tickets out and put them into their various wherever groups of envelopes that they were doing, you know, and whether or not it was a commercial envelope or whatever, and I had to learn all that, but it was quite interesting, and the blokes who used to work in the warehouse, they used to be responsible for, well, they used to have all these work tickets, and you used to have to get all the envelopes out, and then all used to get packed up and bailed up, sent away. Some of them used to go by rail container, Littlewoods, and all that sort of stuff.
So it was a thriving business.
Oh yeah, millions and millions of them a week, you know. Yeah.
Now by this stage it would be the mid 30s, and coming into the late 30s, did you have any feelings about, you know, tensions in between Britain and Germany, tensions in Europe?
Oh, yes,
as a young man, how memories of that that spring to mind?
Yeah, well, there were several things happening there that, there were things happening really, I didn't really start to take very much notice I must admit, until about, I reckon until about 1937. The reason I say that is because there wasn't any hint of a crisis anywhere prior to that. And things were going along fairly steadily, and I never really gave it much thought. But then when it got to about 1937, I began to read. You got more and more. Of course, the newspapers were a little bit different in those days. I didn't give you the sort of information that you get now. I didn't make it so blaring sort of headline, you know. But I started reading about this, that, and the other, and I thought to myself, well, what made me think, Philip said to me one day, he said, I think I'm going to join the Territorials. So I said, what do you want to do that for? He said, well, he'd been thinking about it, obviously, but he said, if there is a war, he said, if you're in the Territorials, he said, at least you know who you're going with, and not where you're going, but you know who you're going with. Whereas if you wait and get called, he said, you won't know who you're going to be with. I said, there's nothing really boiling at the moment. I said, unless it gets any worse, I don't think I have to think a great deal about it. So he said, I think I'll have a go at it. So anyway, what he did, he joined the Territorials at Watford. Now there were, I've got to make a point here about the Territorials, because there were three territorial units in this area. When I say this area, I include Watford, St Albans, and anything that way, which would be Belconsen, Aylesbury. But there was nothing that way. But there was a territorial unit at Watford, there was one at St Albans, and there was one here. Well, this one in Hemel was an infantry unit. The one that Philip joined was in Watford, and that was a light anti-aircraft, coastal defence. The one at St Albans was field artillery, 25 pounders. So, if you wanted to join the Territorials, those were your, so far as this area was concerned, those were your main, that was the only choice you had.
And what was the infantry? Was that the Betts and Harts?
The Betts and Harts, that was this one. And the Betts and Harts, even in those days, were, the headquarters was at Kempston Barracks at Bedford, even then. And that was before the war started. The Hemel Territorial Unit was infantry. They had a drill hall at the other end of town, but they were. It was just a drill hall for this area, for the Hemel area. But if I wanted to join, then that's where I would have gone, and went to enlist there. Same way as if I wanted to go to St Albans one, there's nothing to stop me doing it, or Watford, if I wanted to. But obviously, this was the nearest.
But so, but
even so, I can't actually say that I had some very. I didn't have any thoughts about doing anything like that. Because.
You weren't persuaded by your brother?
No, no. And you see, I knew that at that particular time, and I was living in Boxmoor, and that's Boxmoor is where you got off the train. Well, that's Hemel. I call it Hemel, but that is really Boxmoor. You see, but anyway, I was living over there then, and but I know I never took much notice of it. I knew that there were people in Boxmoor who joined up at in Hemel for this unit here, this territorial army here, and of course they were only called upon to do a few drills or something or visits a year, shall we say. There was nothing hard and fast about it. The only hard and fast thing was, well, they would have a fortnight's camp at some given time in the summer, when they would go to places like Salisbury Plain or somewhere like that, for a fortnight's camp. But other than that, you would have to expect us to do a certain amount of drills a year, and that was it.
Did any of your workmates follow Philip's example? Any of your workmates at the? Did any of your workmates follow your brother's example?
Some of them did. Yeah, some of them did. But you see, they seem to get the idea of, because it was you and I joining at the same time. When the war was declared, you and I would be going together. That was the idea. So, you know, and I never really.
You never believed that would happen.
No, I didn't. I didn't think it would happen because by 1938, I began to feel that I couldn't think of it. Well, I thought to myself that I don't think there's anything that can stop it now.
Why was that? Why did you feel that?
Well, because 1938. In 1938, I mean, they did the same. I made the same trip to. Was it Chamberlain, wasn't it? Went to Berlin or somewhere, and to talk. Of course, Hitler was going into all these small countries, and you know, taking them all, and as and when he wanted. And what made me think the way I did was the easy way in which he was doing it, and he seemed to sort of go in and make a mess. And do what he wanted to do and then move on to the next one. So it was going on. And so when it came to 1938 and Chamberlain went over there to talk with him again to try and stop him from going into these small countries, that was the idea. Of course he said he didn't intend to stop. And I thought to myself, well, if he can do that, do what he's done up to now. He's certainly got something behind him there. He obviously had plenty of troops, he had plenty of aircraft, and there were plenty of them. And, you know, it was going to be a long job, I thought. If it comes, it's not going to be a 5-minute thing. That's why I began to think along those lines.